Hey everyone, just a quick word before we start this week's episode. We are in need of your help, the listener. The Air Raid podcast takes a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of money to put on each week. And we need your guys' help on this one. So if you could, please visit our website, www.air-raid.net, and donate a little bit of money to the show. Doesn't have to be much, maybe $5, $20, $30, whatever you think is worth this free entertainment each week. We would really appreciate it, and thank you so much in advance. All right, enjoy the program. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 145 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom, indeed. And, of course, just like every week, we have a veritable payload of awesome for you, in store for you, my friends. The band My Goodness will be joining us here shortly. They're a two-piece out of here, out of Seattle. They are very, very good. They've been doing some big things. They've been getting some big shows. And they're here to talk with us all about that, how they started playing music, growing up in religious households. The lead singer, Joel, even has a very interesting story about how he moved to Seattle at the age of 17, moving out of his parents' house to get away from that. So, it's a good conversation. I think you guys will enjoy it. And it's fun. And we'll be featuring some new music by the band, My Goodness. So, throughout the episode, 145 of these, my friends. We have done 145 episodes of the Air Raid Podcast, and we are still going somewhat strong, right? I will say that I have been getting a little burnt out on this. I'm not going to lie. We got some bad emails a little while back after our Mudhoney episode. I think we had a couple fans of Mudhoney that ended up listening to the show and did not like some of the things that I said pertaining to being stuck in the 90s. So I think I told a couple of you that I was going to read those online on the program, but I don't know if I want to read it. Actually, I will. I'll read this one because I still remember it. It was one line. And it said, "Your show sucks." That's it. And then it was signed by Anonymous. That hurt, though. Right now, as I'm thinking back on it, it's kind of funny. But it hurt my feelings. So if you're listening to this and you were the one that wrote, "Your show sucks," thanks for listening. I hope you donate to the show. Oh my God. Can I just explain this a little bit? I don't know if that pre-roll, explains the whole situation, but we are in need of some new equipment. I'm about to go on a whole spiel here. It's just going to take a second here, folks. You know, this show is a labor of love, and I work really hard at bringing you a new guest, a new interesting guest each week, and it definitely takes a toll on, a lot of things. I get off of work, and I start work again on this show, sending emails, doing Facebook stuff, and trying to make this thing a real thing, really. We need some new equipment. The equipment is very expensive. And so we need your help. If you listen to the show, if you enjoy the show, please donate to the program. Donate to the cause at www.air-raid.net. You can go there. The donate button is right there on the upper left-hand corner. And just donate what you think we deserve, you know? If you think we're a mediocre program, donate us a mediocre sum of money, which would be like $500,000. I don't know if you knew that, but that's how it goes. Anyway, I digress. Let's move on, shall we? This week has been interesting. My wife and child traveled over to the land of Missoula, Montana, to go visit my sister-in-law, Megan, and her significant other, Josh, who are both listeners to the program. So, hello, guys. But they went over to Montana because Tatum, as of like last week or this last week, was not yet two, and she was still free on flights, on airplanes, right? So Mairead wanted to take her over while she was still cheap and go see the aunt and uncle. So I was like, yes, do that. I will have 2 days to myself. Of course, there were work nights, but, you know, whatever. A night to yourself is a precious thing when you have a family. You know, not saying that I do not love my child or wife, but, you know, sometimes I need some alone time. And I found out really quickly that whenever my family leaves, I revert back into like a 13-year-old boy with an Xbox because I cannot just go to sleep. Like, I mean, there's too many good things to watch on HBO Go, too many good things to watch on Netflix, too much great porno out there. I mean, how could I just keep my hands off of myself, right? So I ended up anyway. That's gross. I didn't mean to go there. But I ended up staying up till like, you know, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning on a work night each night. And then waking up the next day and just looking at myself and just being totally disgusted because I was so tired. I even like ate a whole bag of pirate's booty in bed while I watched episodes of the Venture Brothers on Netflix. Yeah, that's how I roll, man. That is how I roll. Ended up watching what did I watch? It wasn't even worth it. It wasn't even, my 2 days off were not even worth it. I watched what, Scream 4 in its entirety, and I actually watched a pretty good movie. It was called it was that Snow White reboot with that Kirsten lady from the Twilight series, which I thought she did pretty good in. Snow White and the Huntsman. It was pretty good. You guys should check that out if you haven't seen it already. It's on HBO Go, and you can see it there or rent it wherever. Right? Yeah. What do people even still do that? I don't know. Anyway, it was a good movie. It was a good movie. So yeah, I totally reverted back to a teenager. Had no self-control at all with the food I was eating and the time I was going to bed and how many times I pressed the goddamn snooze button. It was insane. It was insane. I barely made it to work each day that my wife was gone. Sad. So sad. So sad, you guys. All right. Well, let's do this, shall we? Let's go to our first musical break. We're featuring music by the band My Goodness. This song is called Come On Doll, and it's going to be on their upcoming album, which they talk about. And they talk about the release date and a lot of great stuff. So this is Come On Doll by My Goodness, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back.
And not bad.
And Metallica. Awesome. Metallica, yeah, too. Yeah. They're just good for some voices.
I think that works for mine.
Do you guys see that Some Kind of Monster? Did you see it?
I didn't see it.
He sings. He holds the microphone. Yeah, yeah. He holds that microphone and he just sings into it like this.
Really?
Yeah. It looked very strange.
Was that the Saint Anger album?
Yes. Yeah. Well, whatever.
Maybe they should try something else next time. I
think they should. They should branch out. They might try. They might want to try like the folk indie pop that's going on. Welcome back, everybody. That song was "Come On, Doll," and joining me here in the dining room studios is Joel and Andy from the band My Goodness. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Totally. I'm glad you guys could make it. That's a little inside joke. I was telling you guys as you guys walked in here that I had to go around and close all the windows because, first of all, it gets super, super hot in here. It's not even summer yet, but we had like a warmer day in Seattle today. And already, I don't know what you guys feel, but I am like, I'm hot up here.
It's nice. It's I felt really terrible about sitting in my apartment all day. I was like, I got to get out of here. Yeah, like, what am I going to do? I'm so used to this, like sitting inside for like the last, like, you know, how many months?
Just right.
So
yeah, you feel kind of bad, right? You got to get outside and do that thing.
Bar hopped a little this morning. Yeah. You know,
this morning?
Not this morning. This afternoon.
You have serious sun guilt.
Yeah, it was sun guilt.
That's definitely a thing here in Seattle. Yeah. So are both of you guys from Seattle originally?
We're from the east side.
Yeah. We both grew up on the east side.
Yeah.
I moved out to Seattle when I was about 17. And
I moved out here after college.
Yeah.
town did you guys grow up in?
Bellevue.
Yeah.
In Bellevue?
Both of us.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
We went to like different high schools in Bellevue, but we knew each other back then because we were in separate bands in Bellevue, and we used to play these battle of the bands things at different high schools.
At like Ground Zero or something? We'd
have them at the actual high schools. So like the high schools would actually put them on. So I remember one at, we did a show, I think it was Sammamish.
There was a Sammamish one.
Yeah, there was a big Sammamish high school one. Yeah. And I remember like watching him drum for this band. I think they were called Special Guest at the time.
Something stupid like that.
Yeah. that sounds about right. That sounds about right. I think we're all about the same age.
The name of the band I was in was Jack Squat. So Jack. I mean, it's easy. And so, you know, whatever. But but I remember after his band played, like the janitor at the school just flipped out, like went up to him and was just like, that drumming is insane, like you got it, like he was just like, I remember seeing that, I'm like, whoa, like,
do you remember this,
that
Andy?
Old guy? Absolutely. is like flipping out.
Yeah,
like,
he came up, he grabbed my arm and he was just like, yeah, you know, he's like, you got it, man. That's all he said. It was like very simple. That's like,
yeah, I remember seeing that, I'm like, whoa.
So let me ask you a question, Andy. Did you look at, from that point on, did you look at that janitor differently? Like, it, what
well, you didn't go to that school. You went to
That was a different school.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was interesting because I was going to school in Redmond and all my bandmates went to Sammamish.
Uh-huh.
And so we were playing that show and it was like something out of a movie. You know, he came up, he grabbed my arm, he said these like really powerful words, and then he just kind of like moseyed off into the darkness.
Strolled off like, the dark halls of the school to go clean up some puke somewhere.
Like, I was like, wow, that was it. That was my prophetic moment or something. I don't know what it was. Yeah.
That's that changed your life right there. I'd like that steer. I'll bet you that was like that moment had a serious butterfly effect on your life. Like I'm guessing that
I still remember it. So
yeah.
I remember it.
Yeah, he remembers it.
You were standing right there. So you guys are rivals, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess, yeah,
kinda.
I mean, all like a bunch of mutual friends and stuff.
Yeah,
back then. So, but
you guys, you know Alex, right? Alex Lolario.
I don't know. I don't know.
Don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh, you do. Oh.
Yeah.
I thought for some reason that you guys had gone to high school together, but
I went to international. I went to like a really small high school. It was
international.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then he went to Overlake, which is like an equally same small size. High school.
Right. Right. yeah. Totally. So when did music start in both of your lives? Were your parents musical?
My mom plays piano all the time,
uh-huh.
And I think she used to just always play music in the car, you know. My dad worked.
Like what? What were you listening to in the car? Going to get groceries.
The Carpenters a lot. Okay. Which was cool. We used to listen to Rubber Soul all the time. Constantly listen to that record all the time.
Let me interject something really quick. Yeah. Because everybody says the Carpenters, and then they say really cool afterwards.
Oh.
And I don't get it. I don't get the Carpenters thing.
Okay.
I don't understand it. I think what remember that like that album that came out with like with Sonic Youth did it. It was a cover album of all Carpenters. And like Sonic Youth did a cover. Mm-hmm. That's the only one I can remember. A bunch of 90s bands did covers of Carpenters albums. And I think that's when people started thinking, oh, the Carpenters are actually kind of cool. Was that the moment for you that you thought that Carpenters were cool?
No, man.
You just liked
it. I always thought Karen Carpenter's voice was amazing. I loved it.
Okay.
And she's also a drummer.
Yes, I know that. Yeah, that was that's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
But sorry for putting you on the spot.
That's
but
okay.
I just need to find out.
This is obviously much later in life when YouTube was around, but like I YouTubed her one time, and there's this like grainy video of her like doing a drum solo.
Really?
It's on a TV show, and I don't want to say I can't remember which TV show it was, but uh-huh. she shredded. She totally shredded.
Yeah.
It was super cool. So. I'm still a fan.
So Carpenter, you were listening to, your mom was listening to Carpenters, a lot of Rubber Soul.
A lot of Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So
they push you into playing an instrument?
They did, actually. Yeah. So I always wanted to play the drums. I from the moment I heard drums, I wanted to play it. My neighbor played, and he was really good, and I remember going over there for a party and just watching him play, and I don't know. I couldn't stop thinking about playing drums. It was that was like the moment for sure. But they weren't big fans of it at the beginning. I had like a snare drum, you know,
uh-huh.
and I would just bash on it all night long.
The
and
shit
it,
out
oh,
of that
it
thing,
was
right?
horrible. It probably sounded so bad. and so they told me it's like you should try something different. So I tried trumpet, and it was a nightmare. I was horrible.
Yeah,
I did the absolutely same thing, terrible. Man.
Trumpet?
My mom rented me a trumpet.
Yeah.
For one point.
Really?
And I just drove him crazy.
I really wanted to play trumpet because it always just seemed so easy. There were three keys.
Yeah.
And that was it.
It's not the,
I
mean,
no,
it's
I know.
Like how you actually.
Oh, I found that out.
And I didn't get that. And like the whole like how you form your mouth and everything. And
oh yeah.
And I had played clarinet. I think I was a kid. It was like fifth grade, and I. Uh-huh. Play clarinet, and then going into middle school, I wanted to learn the trumpet, so she rented me one, and it was just like 2 weeks of me having this in my room, just making the most horrific noises. And I was like, nope.
So, we'll get you an electric that guitar that you can make silent, right? Is that what happened?
No.
No?
Not at all. No, I think they would have liked for me to play a traditional instrument.
Like cello. I can see you playing cello.
Yeah.
Are your parents more classical music enthusiasts?
No, my story is quite a bit different than Andy's. I grew up in a very conservative household, so.
Really? Religious?
Yes. And so music secular music wasn't really allowed in my high school, or I said high school, sorry, in my household at all. So mm-hmm. I, growing up, I used to hide like a little radio under my pillow and listen to The End. Like
really?
Yeah, like at night and just like not sleep and be super, super tired and just miserable the next day at school, and my teachers couldn't figure out why, and I was always like really into it, and then I think I was about 13 or 14, and my dad had bought a acoustic guitar for my mom, and he'd gone on a business trip in Japan and brought a Yamaha guitar back home. It's an acoustic guitar.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And to use, I think, primarily for church meetings and stuff like that. And I started, I discovered tabs and online and started just learning different songs and stuff. And then I took some lessons with a guy from the church that I grew up in, and learning chords and stuff like that. And then I played throughout high school a little bit here and there. I think around 16 or 17, I stopped going to church at all, and I wasn't really sure what was going on.
Wait, was that like to your parents' chagrin? Like, were they still going to church and still trying to get you to go to church as well? Or what?
Yeah, and so things kind of fell out in that department in my life. And so I ended up moving out actually when I was 17. So I was at my very tail end of high school.
Whoa, dude.
My senior year. And
did you finish?
Yeah, I finished.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was fortunate enough to have a really good friend. Actually, the guy that directs our music videos now took me in.
He's about
5 years older than me, but he was 24 at the time.
Uh-huh.
Or not 24. He was like 22, 23 at the time and took me in. And his roommate was out a semester at sea, and so he just let me live there for like $150 a month until I finished high school. And then the next
year. So how were you making money?
I was landscaping.
Yeah?
Wow. On the weekends. Yeah.
Dude, that's kind of a little bit of a crazy story.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy story.
Yeah.
So I think that like music was something that I always loved and it was kept from me. So I just, I wanted to do it even more.
Yeah.
That really made me want to do it even more. And so, you know, and I even in high school, like my senior project, I wrote like a, you know, 4-song EP and then this acoustic thing. But I never ever had access to an acoustic guitar an electric guitar. I was able to borrow an electric guitar and play in this band for just a second, that Jack Squat band when I was like 15 or 16. And then, you know, met him at the Battle of the Bands thing. But I didn't have access to that kind of stuff. And I think that, you know, obviously the music thing, it was one of the reasons why I ended up having to move out. But I just continued to do it, you know, I gave up guitar for a little while. I actually played keys in a band for a while, and I went to college at Central Washington, Ellensburg, Central Washington University.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
That's where I went.
Right on.
Yeah.
Wildcats.
When were you there?
I don't know, like 03, 04?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
04.
I think I was still
there. 04 would be my first year there, actually.
Okay. I think I was still there.
Yeah, 04, 05, and then I came home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah. So I went to Central, did some music over there. Like I was trying to music minor and then Ellensburg, I love Ellensburg, but I don't know. I needed to go back to Seattle. So,
yeah.
So I did.
Well, not much of a music scene over there.
Not much. We had some cool stuff though. I mean, we had a couple of cool bands come and play in our dorm commons. And
oh,
stuff.
Right on.
And, yeah, it was fun. I think we had like Schoolyard Heroes and
Kane Hodder and
Pale Pacific and The Divorce. They all came and played in our dorm commons.
That's
which
awesome.
Was pretty cool. You know, just a bunch of buddies and me just going crazy. And
what and dorm like were you in?
Beck Hall. Yeah.
I was up in I think it was called McCarty or McCartney.
Okay. Yeah.
Or something like that.
I think it was like the other side of the main university drag.
Yes.
Like,
and it was our dorm was like the one, like when you signed up to go to school there, you could pick if you wanted like a quieter dorm or if you didn't care.
Right? Yeah. You picked the quieter
dorm,
right? And so, of course,
I picked I didn't care.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was like, let's get going here. This is college.
I don't think there's any quiet dorms at that college.
No, not at all. Yeah, I don't think those rules really applied.
No,
but this
really.
was like before, I don't know what had transpired, but this was before, because I was over there in 99, 99 through maybe 2004 or something like that. And my first year there was no cops on campus. They wouldn't come to the dorms or anything like
that.
There's
5 departments of police in that city.
There is now. And one of the reasons is my dorm, when I lived there, people were getting so drunk. And there was a couple people in particular that were the problems because they came from very conservative households like yourself, and they came over there and got so shithoused every night that the cops had to be constantly called. So after about, I don't know, half of the year had gone by, they just started sending cops to the dorm just to patrol like our halls, and it was the weirdest shit.
I had cops come to my door, my dorm room.
Yeah,
door.
Were you smoking a little weed in there?
No,
or something?
Actually, it was weird. I when I was in high school, I'd found like a street sign, like a no dumping street sign in like Kirkland or something, and I had it hanging in the window.
Oh no!
And they saw it from the street.
Of course.
Came up like midnight, knocked on my door, woke me up, and there's like 4 cops and like full like Kevlar vests. So I was like, what is going on? And they're like, what? like, you have a street sign. Did you steal a street sign? They're like super pissed at me. Like, came in, looked at it. And I was like, no, I found that on the ground in Kirkland, like, in Seattle area, a year ago. Like, no, it's not from here. And they're like, and they're all mad and took off. And I was like, that was weird. All right.
One thing with the police officers over at Central Washington is that's where they train to become state patrol as well. And so they,
county, man. Kidnap County.
Really? Is it? Is it really?
All right, I probably shouldn't go. Let's just leave it at that.
I didn't know that. Anyway, that's small world.
We'd hear about like friends like getting busted for weed and stuff like that, and they would be in jail a little longer than probably was appropriate.
Oh yeah, totally.
When I was in college, but anyways, so
it was training, part of the training,
keep them in there as long as possible. Yeah.
So we kind of got off on a tangent there.
We did,
but that's, anyways, that's fine.
Yeah. So anyways, I came back from college and started playing organ in a band actually for a little while. And
so is that something that just kind of comes natural to you, or did you have to practice it at that kind of stuff?
Well, it was weird. There was two instruments in my house growing up, and one was like this old piano, and like a bunch of keys didn't work. Like, no one ever played it. And then there was the acoustic guitar. And I ended up, my senior high school, ended up moving the piano into my bedroom. Just never played it. And so I ended up just like screwing around a piano and kind of learning just the basics, chords, and started writing actually songs on piano.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't very good, but a lot of the stuff is all in these major chords. So it was very like this very like kind of poppy kind of vibe that I was doing.
Right.
And, but then I kind of translated that over to organ, and I was running this organ through like a old Yamaha bass cab, like with a distortion pedal, and then through like a Marshall half stack. And it was like this crazy, almost like guitar sound through an organ. This is when I was like 19, 20 and, played a band doing that for a little while, went on a little tour. And nothing really happened. I mean, it was just for fun.
Yeah.
But but I didn't really start playing guitar again until My Goodness started. And so I was bartending. I started bartending at Numo's, the venue.
Where you're still working, right?
Yeah. Where I still work. And I started working there when I was 22. Mm-hmm. And I think a couple of years later, I started in Absolute Monarchs a couple of years later. The other band I was in for a while.
Are you not in that anymore?
Well, no, we're still playing. I think we're probably just gonna play a couple more shows. And I think that.
Oh, really?
That's about it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. It's still kind of up in the air. But our schedules are so crazy in that band that I don't know if it's really ever gonna progress into touring or anything like that. We never have, I don't think we ever really will. And so, but But I started playing in that band, and then because of that, there was a practice space there, and Sean was really cool about me borrowing his guitar equipment and stuff like that. And so I think one night I just went in there with our old drummer, My Goodness, and just started jamming and borrowing his guitar stuff. But I'd started writing these songs at home in open tuning. I had kind of read about like Keith Richards playing and a bunch of his songs.
Did you read his biography or something?
No, but I remember reading about him playing a lot of songs in open D. So I actually do want to read that, though. I heard it's great. Yeah.
I haven't read the book, but the open D is the best.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
Well, see, the funny thing, though, is that I got it wrong at first.
Oh, really?
I thought it was open G. So
open G is great too.
Yeah. So I tuned it. The first thing I did was tune to open G and started learning all these songs, like not learning songs, but like just like trying to learn how to play different things in that tuning.
Right. Yeah.
And I actually didn't learn any covers or anything. I was just like, what can I do with this tuning? I'm just really curious. And then I just out of nowhere, just started writing these songs. And just coincidentally, like the year before, I'd really been getting into blues music. And I walked into the Comet Tavern one night, and this a buddy of mine is playing like a Muddy Waters record, and I was like, "Well, this is I've heard some of the things before, but I never really like latched on to an artist before like that." Yeah. And so I like went home and got like the entire discography of Muddy Waters and just like nerding out on it and loved it. And then from then it just was like went out of control. It just was like getting on into these all these old blues artists, you know. And you know, from there I just like, okay, and that's when I learned like, okay, a lot of these people are playing in open tuning. And so that's when I just started screwing around there. And then from there I just started playing these riffs that were like these bluesy riffs and then just singing melodies over the top and started writing these songs. And it was all on acoustic. I never really gave it a shot on an electric until I was able to borrow Sean's equipment from Alzheimer's Monarchs and go in with our old drummer and just start messing around. And I was like, whoa, this actually could work on electric. Like it actually surprised me. I didn't know what I was really doing. I hadn't played electric guitar since high school.
All you do is you add volume and maybe an occasional delay pedal, and you are the best guitar player on the planet.
Well, at the time, I just had a distortion pedal in the amp, and that was about it. And I was like, wow, this sounds pretty cool. Like, you know, like I didn't know it could sound like this. Just kind of went from there, you know. We at that point were like, all right, well, like we can actually get some songs together. And so I think we got like 3 or 4 songs like done, completed, and I had lyrics and everything. And there was like an employee band night coming up at Numo's, I'm like, all right, let's do it. Like, let's just have fun. Let's just play the show. I wasn't expecting it to be a band beyond that. To be honest with you, like I thought it would just be for that show. And so we came up with a working title, My Goodness, because it was like, it's like our goodness, we're keeping to ourselves kind of thing. Like, nothing's going to happen after this show. And that was kind of the idea behind it. And so we played the show, and the response to the show was like beyond anything I'd ever had in any other band.
So was that open? That was open to like everybody, the public?
It ended up being like 200 people there.
Nice.
It was a curtain show at Numo's, but there was about 200 people there, and... yeah, it was a lot of fun.
A lot of cool
bands playing. There's a band called Nom Ghost, which is like Marty from Cave Singers was playing drums in that band.
It was
like this band that got back together, and it was pretty. It was just a fun time. It was like it was just to have a good time. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of industry people, a lot of people from the neighborhood showed up, and it was it was fun. But the response was beyond anything I'd expected, and so. You know, after that, that kind of served with the impetus for us to be like, all right, well, maybe we should actually make this a band.
Yeah, maybe we should practice twice a week.
Yeah, write a few more songs.
Get some more shit.
Yeah, and so that it kind of went from there.
Right on. So let's, Andy, get back to you for a second here. So you started playing drums kind of around high school age. Is that right?
I was mostly playing drums with some of my best friends in a band at the time. We played all the way up until we all went to college.
And the janitor really liked you.
I always thought of him.
You were huge in janitor circles.
I was. I kind of lost touch with the drum set for a little while I was at college. I went to UPS down in Tacoma.
Oh, okay.
And I was in the music school there, and I learned a ton there. It wasn't on the drum set.
So did you know at a young age that music was something you wanted to do? Because let me just say this, too. You're in, like, what, 80 bands? You're in, like, 80 other bands
just,
as well?
Just three.
Oh, okay, just three. Okay.
I think, like, at the time, we were so lucky, like, being on the East Side, that scene was amazing, like, the local music scene. I remember being in a band with my friends. It was just for fun at the time. We would play shows just like the Battle of the Bands that he was describing earlier. And I loved playing the drums, but I think once I started getting into the local, like Ground Zero, Redmond Firehouse, all those places that would put on these amazing shows when I was like 14, 15, 16. Uh-huh. I mean, I remember seeing...
Well, they would bring, and just for people who are listening outside of the Washington area, the Redmond Firehouse would bring in like bands, like bigger bands, like These Arms Are Snakes stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm seeing Blood Brothers there. I mean, there's still bands that came out of our neighborhood.
But they would let like the younger high school bands from the area open up for these venues.
It was the first time I ever like really felt like I was a part of like, you know, some sort of like really strong local something. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? And like, I just, perfect example, I remember going to see the Blood Brothers show at Redmond Firehouse and like, that was like, you know, also Waxwing at Ground Zero. I remember that show really just had a huge impact on me. But yeah, Blood Brothers and These Arms Are Snakes out at Redmond Firehouse. I just remember just like, I thought the walls were going to cave in. Like, there was so much energy in the room.
Oh, yeah.
And, like,
yeah, there's still amazing video of that show. Like, yeah, it was like an insane show.
It was the first show I had ever shown up to there, and they had like an actual, like, kind of barrier at the front of the stage, because even the staff knew, like, this shit's going to get crazy tonight.
Yeah. Right, right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, these aren't their stakes, man. They would jump all over the place. That was, like, one of the first shows that I ever saw that people actually, like, you know, with not including, like, some of the 90s bands, like Mudhoney or
something.
But that was, like, one of the first shows that I saw as an adult that I was like, holy shit, this still happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where people are actually, you know, crowd surfing and stage diving. And, man, just nuts. Yeah. Nutty shit going on the stage.
Yeah. But, you know, after college, I decided, you know, I was going to move back to Seattle and and try to be as involved as possible. Yeah, yeah. And I started playing with the band KK and His Weather Underground. Was playing drums for them for about a year and a half. And then I got involved with the Wild Orchid Children, which was basically an offshoot of that.
Yeah. Which are you're still in now?
No, right? That band is no longer.
Is it done? Okay.
We put out a record on Equal Vision and nothing happened.
Yeah.
But that was how I kind of got to reconnect with him, because we would see each other down at South By. And, you know, we hung out one day. This was actually, we kind of reconnected when Wild Orchid Children played down there. And then we kind of actually got to hang out a little bit when Craft Spells was playing the following year.
Craft Spells being another band that you're
a part of. Yeah. And we kind of talked about just, you know, he didn't really say it outright, but you kind of alluded to, you know, there might be some changes with My Goodness. You know, would you be open to, you know, playing that kind of style of music or whatever?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, like, the loud thing has always been in my wheelhouse. It's always been my strong point. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm always into that. So, I mean, we didn't talk till what? I mean, maybe, I think it must have been maybe 7 or 8 months later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like middle summer kind
of. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're, I must say, you are a heavy hitter.
Yes.
I like that. I like it.
And that's what, you know, that's what this band needs. We need to meet. There's a lot of, he makes a lot of noise.
Yeah, yeah.
And I need to match him in that intensity.
Right.
So,
yeah, you need to do that in a two-piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, right. I saw him play, or I saw Andy play at, in Wild Orchid Children at Numo's. Probably, like, I mean, it was before I'd reconnected with you. And I was just like, whoa, okay, yeah, that guy still got it. Like, you know, like, I hadn't seen him play since high school. But I'm like, whoa, okay, like, that's amazing. And I think the thing that really was, like, that kind of blew me away was the dynamic contrast, the ability to have this be extremely technical, but, like, still maintain this dynamic contrast between, like, hitting extremely hard, but then, like, being able to, like, take it easy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, still be, like, you know, really technical and accurate and... I was like, wow, that's really impressive. Not a lot of people can do that.
I think
and
in the business, they actually call that tasty.
Tasty.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. New turn. I'll new take turn that for you guys.
I'll
you
take
guys,
tasty.
You put that in your pocket.
I was really nervous about like working with a new drummer, and I didn't really know how it was going to go. And I think for a long time, that's why I continued with the drummer that was in the band before for so long. And even though it was like a...
Well, and drummers too are really like drum... And I would love to hear your take on this, because drummers are like... hot commodities, man. Like, they are, like, a good drummer is few and far between, and you got to really work to find one, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're all in, like, 8 bands.
Yeah.
Because there's so few, right? Everybody wants to be a goddamn guitar player, right? Including myself and Joel. You know, have you found that in Seattle? Is that a specifically like a Seattle thing, or what do you think? What are your thoughts?
No, I don't think it's a specific Seattle thing. But
I mean,
I
drum. I'm the worst though. I'm terrible.
Let me tell you. Guys.
I mean, I have a kit. I try.
Yeah, yeah. I am a terrible drummer. Yeah.
No, I think they are. I think they are hard to find.
It takes like it's like a full body instrument. Man.
Yeah,
it takes
yeah.
some serious like yeah. know how to keep that rhythm as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, there are a lot of people out there that do. I think a lot of people forget, like, you know, like, it's not always about the showiness of it too.
Mm-hmm.
Having a good timekeeper in your band is huge, and it's really 80% of that, I guess, that sound of being a solid or a great drummer,
yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
And I think I got lucky because I used to be obsessed when I was younger with playing to music. So I would like obsess over what kind of headphones I should get to like balance the sound between my drums and like playing to tracks and you know.
Yeah.
And it was funny because at the time I was listening to, you know, a lot of like the 90s bands, you know.
Yeah.
And those records were made very cleanly and very, there was a lot of like, you know, glitz to those records. They were recorded really like hard to grids and like, you know, very like very crisp stuff. And that's what I ended up drumming to a lot. And so I think like over time I created like a natural meter for myself because I was obsessed with drumming, you know, like to those records. And so like, I just like would, you know, I would like, my mouth would be sore after I would play because I was just like clenching my teeth, trying to stay with it, you know, trying to stay that beat. So it was almost like, and my drum teacher told me at a young age, it's like the most important thing you can do is practice to a metronome every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really boring, right?
It's well, really it's kind of hard to do too, because it can fuck you up.
Yes.
Playing to, I mean, for any instrument that you're playing to, like for people who don't know, like when you go into a studio, sometimes you play to a click track. If you're doing separate tracks, like guitar is going to record first or something like that, you're playing to a click track to make sure you're keeping time.
Yeah.
And it can really mess you up.
Right. I think just playing to those records that were made extremely rigidly, I was able to, it was like practicing to a metronome.
Right.
And then,
right.
you know, you fast forward to us doing our record with Rick out at London Bridge where he said, well, no, you guys sound good together. Let's not use a click.
Yeah, yeah.
And so after making, you know, four or five records with other bands in between then, you know, that was definitely, I was like, oh, shit. Like, okay. Like, now it's on me, you know, to make this, keep this thing at a reasonable tempo.
Right, right.
This
yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, like, it's been very rewarding to listen back to what we've been doing. And, you know, 80% of the record is not done to a click. And, you know, hearing, you're capturing the energy at the same time as you are capturing like the songwriting too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm so happy that we did that without it.
Yeah.
Like, and the drum sounds are a lot like those drum sounds you listen to and you're like,
exactly. I mean, Rick is 90s
bands. I mean, it's
the original
like,
owner of London Bridge.
It's that crazy, like just every tom. I mean, I think he used like every channel on the board.
Well, and like, you were saying before we started recording too, you were telling me that the same board that the board that they're using at London Bridge is the same board that they use in Sound City, which Dave Grohl just bought.
72, right? I think it's 72 or 74. I can't remember. But
all the tape too. Are you guys recording the tape?
72 Neve board. No, not.
We are not recording this. Oh, okay. No.
No.
All right. Well, let's take a musical break here. We're going to be featuring music that's coming up on the new album. Is there a name for the album yet, or? Nothing.
No, we have not.
We don't have a name for
that. We have a few up in the air, but we gotta like still hash
can I,
that
can
out.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Jack Squat.
Yes.
My goodness, Jack Squat. All right, this is
we do the same Chris Farley intro.
There you go. All right, this song is called "I've Got a Notion," and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us. Did you find another lover? We'll be right back.
It goes straight into the gym.
That guy's fantastic. Welcome back, everybody. That was the song "I've Got a Notion" off of the what would this be, like the first full length, or is this second? It's full length for My Goodness.
It's the second full length for My Goodness. Okay. That song we just put out on our 7-inch,
right? Which you brought me. Yes, which is very nice. It's, thank you very much.
It's a limited edition 7-inch. It's on our online store. And it's got Cold Feet Killer on one side and I've Got a Notion on the other.
Awesome. Yeah. And you can get that at mygoodnessmusic.com.
Yes, that's right? Correct. Yep.
Excellent. Well, welcome back, everybody. Let's see. We're joined here by, of course, the band My Goodness, Joel and Andy. I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about festival culture, because there was this thing on Jimmy Kimmel Live the other night.
Oh my God,
about
amazing.
Coachella. Have you seen this?
Yes.
This video?
Yes,
I'm sure everybody's seen this video by now. But it's so funny because this woman is standing, if you haven't seen it, this woman is standing here and she's interviewing these kids that are at the festival, face paint, you know, like two girls are in their bras or something, you know, that whole Madonna look is coming back apparently. And one guy's in like a feather headdress.
Yeah, he was.
You know,
he didn't know where he was.
But they just make up band names, and they're like, "So, what do you think about Get the Fuck Out of My Pool?"
That was my favorite, actually.
they're great. Like,
yeah,
like
they're fantastic.
No, the quote was like super. Their whole genre is just great.
Yeah, they have so much energy live.
Was that
like
it?
Their
was
live it? Energy oh is God. Amazing. Like. I can't wait to see them.
Oh my God. But this is kind of a tangent here, but Shelby Earl, friend of the show, Shelby Earl, went and made a Facebook fan page for the band Get the Fuck Out of My Pool.
Oh, good. No, I'm glad that happened.
So go,
that's great.
So go
no,
and
I need
like
to like
that.
That yeah.
Go and like that page. But understand it's not
Will
a real band.
Do.
But anyway, I wanted to get your guys' take on this because it sounds like you've both been in bands, you've gone to these, you've played these festivals, you've played South by Southwest, correct?
Yeah.
Numerous times.
I've played three times.
Okay.
I've played Sasquatch once.
Yeah.
Capitol Hill Block Party several times. Bumper Shoot a couple times.
Yeah. And we're getting into festival season.
Yeah.
There is
yeah.
definitely like an established season now.
Yeah.
For festivals. What's your take on these things? What's it like playing them? And, you know, is it an enjoyable experience?
South by Southwest is its own beast.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That is a very specific environment that you get into down there.
Well, it's all industry. Like what a lot of people don't realize is that South by Southwest was built for industry. Right?
Yeah. But, and that's kind of like the idea behind it. I feel like for, especially for like a band like us, it was, because we are now, I mean, we're now without a label. So mm-hmm. we bought our record back from our label. So then we're recording a new record. Mm-hmm. And so it served a purpose for us to be down there. It was to.
Oh, did you guys go down there most recently?
Yeah, we did. We had this last year.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
So it was to, you know, to play basically for labels and, mm-hmm. and people that were, you know, in the industry.
Yeah, it's a showcase.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And that served a purpose for that. And,
okay, so let me ask you, like, how does that feel being up on stage, like, trying to sell your product? Because you really are, like, you are trying to sell a product.
Well, first of all,
you don't even know if someone's going to show up or not.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you're just
yeah,
like,
right.
Okay, I hear this person from this label, this label, this label is going to show up to your show.
Right,
and you're like,
right.
Okay, well, like, maybe. But, like, you don't know. So, like,
yeah.
Fuck it. Like, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
you just play your show, like it doesn't really honestly matter. I mean, you don't even know which one they're going to show up for because you're playing like seven of them, you know.
Right.
So it's like it's, you know, like it, it's great, whatever, like it's fun. And you know, I'd say at least 50% of our showcases were well attended, and it was a
uh-huh.
great time. And
yeah,
the other, but you really honestly, like, when you're looking at your schedule to go down there, you honestly don't know how it's going to turn out. You like,
right,
maybe this
right.
could be a total bust, maybe it
mm-hmm.
won't be, like, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
you're the alley's places you never heard of, you're like, all right, we're just gonna show up there and play.
Yeah.
And like, and then, you know,
you're going to Bob's, you're playing at Bob's barbecue hut.
Yeah,
yeah,
like
exactly. But a few of them are like, you're like, whoa, this is great, like this
yeah,
is
uh-huh.
fantastic. And then I will say there was like two at least that we knew, like when we go down there, like these are going to be
big showcases. Mm-hmm. We already know before we go down. Yeah. But then, like, you obviously don't want to go down there and play two shows and be there for a week. So you're gonna book like other things around it.
So it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Number one.
It's a lot of work.
I would say it is a zoo. And so and so outside of it serving a purpose and it, you know, like for us especially, I would say I wouldn't really want to do it again unless we had something to gain out of it. It's a lot of stress to go down there and do that whole thing. Yeah.
I'll lay it out. Like the only reason, like I have friends that, you know, now in the, playing in the band Portugal the Man, and like the only reason when they were down there is because they played some parties during Interactive Week. Yeah. The stuff that you actually get paid for. Yeah. You know what I mean? That would be the only reason.
Yeah. I'm not even including like paid. I mean, that would obviously, if we were to get paid for shows down there, then that would be a whole other scenario.
So wait, you're not even getting like a cut of the door or anything?
There is that at these places? No. I mean, because you're talking about showcases.
I had no idea that there was no pay.
Oh yeah, yeah. You don't get paid. You're doing showcases for you're doing showcases for blogs and like, you know, websites and things that are like, you know, and it's all promotional. And so there's going to be a ton of people at the show. They're going to see you. But I mean, 90% of the time, they're not paying you, even the big bands, to play those shows.
Well, that's the one thing that I never really understood about is that, like, you know, people are going, because with this new kind of festival culture that there is now, people go, like, just everyday people are going to South by Southwest and they get excited for it and they go and they see 500 bands.
Yeah.
But, like, being the band, like, you know, a person's going to see you, but will they even remember you in a sea of other bands that they saw?
Here's the thing. You know? Like, it's different. You have to put South by Southwest in its own category.
Right.
Because it is not like... Because honest to God, truth is anyone can go. Mm-hmm. Any band can go.
Yeah.
And you can basically, you know...
You can line up your own shows.
You can line up your own shows. You can play whatever you want. There is the line between an official showcase and a party is completely blurred when you're down there.
Yeah. I mean,
you
have honestly, no idea. Our unofficial showcases have been well more better than our
you
were ones.
And you and Andy, you just said something too, is like you play a party or something like that and they pay you to play a party.
No.
Oh, I thought you said something about pay.
No.
We'll
play parties, but it's like, different. We'll play these parties down there and there'll be like, you know, hundreds of people there, but you're not getting paid for it.
Yeah. Oh man, that's so weird.
Neither are any of the other bands.
I'm just saying there is a certain level that you couldn't be at that you can be at when you would go down there to play parties, usually not happening during the music week.
Right.
There are parties that people charge admission to you know, But like the parties that you would play down during music week at South By are just, you know, a blog, a magazine, a website, a beer company or something sponsors it.
Yeah.
They give away free beer at the show, but it doesn't cost anybody to get in.
Exactly. So to their credit, I mean, it's not costing anyone to get in and see the show. I mean, there's usually a line out the door, like, you know, people trying to get in. So it's sold out and there's like a line out the door, but there's no one's paying to get in.
Okay.
It's one of those things where like, that's just kind of, I understand this is the idea of it. It's just like, it's a big giant festival of music and most of it is free. And so it's like, you guys can go anywhere and see all these bands that you normally wouldn't be able to see for free. And as long as you wait in line early enough to go see them.
Right.
You know,
I got up at like 11:30 just to go see Deep Sea Diver at noon. Yeah. And I was stoked.
I love that.
And there are like 10 people there.
Oh, really?
No kidding, man.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And I was like, I was a happy.
But you don't know. I'm sure they played shows that were like crazy back down there.
Was that the one at the cathedral that they played, or the?
No, I heard that was awesome. We were playing at that time, so I didn't get to go see that.
But that's the thing. It's like they probably played like 7 or 8 shows. And half of them are probably like no one there. But then the other half are just like this. If they're crazy, you know. Same thing with us. It's just like you don't really know what you're getting into until you actually show up. Yeah. And like, okay.
The bottom line is, I think it's a rite of passage for a lot of bands.
Oh yeah.
You know, you go. You know, you either go consistently or you go once to do your thing. It's just kind of like what we did this year. We went because we have, you know, some people that we wanted to play for, and we have a new record coming out.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like.
So do you view your latest trip down there to be a success or was it?
We had actually it was, I've this as like I said, it's my third time and I definitely had the most fun this time.
Yeah, well, that's
good.
That was a good time.
Yeah. So okay, so South by Southwest to the side.
Yes.
What's, you know, industry to the side? What is it like playing at bigger festivals like Sasquatch and things like that? Because we've had Adam Zaks on this show. We've got kind of the industry look or the booker's look at it. What's your take on playing?
I think we haven't done those like shows yet like together. We haven't done those shows together, like but separately in other bands, I think we have. Mm-hmm. And because we've only been playing since October this year. So
I think
that South By was actually the first like decently big festival we've ever done. I mean,
but
we
you
did,
both
like,
have played
we did,
there.
Yeah, and My Goodness in the past, and then he's played in the Craspels and other bands. And
last year, Joel, you were just there hanging out.
I was hanging out. I got my buddies. We were Augustine's to pick me up, and give me a lift out there. So, but yeah, you know, those kind of festivals, and I mean, we do like Block Party and Bumper Shoot and stuff like that,
is it fun for you?
Yeah, it's a little different. You know, that's not as much as of like a zoo South By.
No.
Like everything's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And the backstage area is way more chill and laid back, and you can really escape there, and that's cool. And that's really important. You know, it's not like you're not dealing with like loading your equipment a block onto 6th Street in Austin then up two flights of stairs, and there's 10,000 people in the street blocking you. Yeah. You know, like you gotta navigate your way through 10,000 people. Like, like that's not something.
That
you know?
Just sounds so freaking horrible.
You know, like, you know, at a big festival, you could just roll your van or your bus, or
and then
your,
the dudes take it out.
Whatever,
for you, they,
like you
they,
can
they,
roll it right to the back of the stage, load your shit out, and get up on there, and then do whatever the fuck you want later, and that's great. And it's just, it's not the same as South By, unless you're getting like paid a ton to do like the MTV U thing or like whatever, you know. Like,
so what about the culture though? Like, what about the culture of the like we began this segment talking about how these younger kids were at Coachella and they wanted to fit in so bad that they would, you know, lie about knowing about a band that doesn't exist.
Well, I think we live in this world where like media happens and things happen like immediately. Right?
Oh yeah.
And so I think like the humor in that whole segment was that, you know, like you're going to the world's biggest music festival pretty much, you know, and someone with a microphone and a TV camera, right, is asking you about this band presumptuously that is very hot. And the second you realize you don't know who it is, I think there's a lot of like, there's a lot of some panic that goes on there because
they're like, oh, well, I'm not going to make it onto the final cut here. I got to act like I know this.
Yeah,
that's a really good point.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think there's that's the humor in it. But I do think it says something about festival culture in a way where, you know, Coachella could not tell anybody who's playing and it would still sell out, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I think, you know, you have music fans there and then you have people that are just there because
it's the party,
you know, it's the party. It's the thing to do. It's the biggest thing in the world. And I feel like every time I turn around, there is a new music festival.
Well, there's people that just go to Coachella and just hang out in that rave tent the entire time and don't even know half the artists they're playing. They don't even know who's DJing at the time and they just drop a bunch of drugs. And honestly, it's probably the majority of the people that are going to these festivals. So, I mean, they're just like, you know,
I would imagine. I got some great pictures of Sasquatch last year of just like people with feathers.
Yeah.
Like all over their
animal
body.
Hats were big too.
Animal hats and feathers and face paint.
I don't
feel like Sasquatch is as
no, but the
bad
first,
in that aspect.
Were you there for the
Coachella
first night?
Is.
Were you there for the
no,
first night?
No, I got there
last
the
year?
Second day.
Okay, so the first night at Sasquatch last year was just all techno, electric, electronic music. I don't know if the kids call it techno anymore, but I do.
I haven't heard that word in a while.
EDM, I think.
EDM,
electronic dance music.
But it was nuts, man. Like, you know, kids walking around with it, and I was there in a press capacity, so it was like, you know, I'm walking around. I felt like Hunter S. Thompson in that place. Like, just, I mean, that was a depraved place on a Friday night. That's for sure. A lot of dust, a lot of face paint.
Yeah.
A lot of drunk kids.
I don't know. For me, last year it was, I had a blast last year. Yeah. I mean, it was
you
really
played on the first day last year, right?
No, I think we were second day. Oh, I
second
think.
Day.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got to meet a lot of Craspels fans that day that I had never met before. Yeah. Especially, you know, young kids. Not just from Washington, too. People that travel up from
Oregon. Oh, yeah. Yeah, people were coming from all over the
British Columbia that come down and, you know, places that the band hadn't toured in quite a bit, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I think, in my opinion, I saw a lot of, you know, true music fans that day. I mean, especially there, being in that environment, like, I got to see St. Vincent side stage. And
oh, my God. I was at that show as well, man.
It's just like...
Yeah. It was nuts. Shredding. And she was so good.
In high heels.
Yeah. Yeah. She was so good. So good. So what's let's switch subjects here. What's coming up with the new album you guys are recording at London Bridge, which we mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
How's that process going?
We're just about done.
Yeah.
Are you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We just had a couple days, last week, I think, that we did guitar overdubs and just some little vocal things that needed to be fixed up. And I think now we just have organ. We're going to lay down some organ tracks to a couple of the songs, and then it's ready to be mixed.
How long have you guys been recording all this stuff?
Started in January, right? Beginning of January? Or was it... Oh, did we start in
December? No, well, we did four songs, which are the ones that we're playing on the show today. And that was in October. And November. No, it was in November.
Okay,
so we did this in November.
Our
first show we played together. That's the crazy thing. Yeah. It's our first show we played together was in October.
Like, really?
Yeah. And so in November we recorded the four songs, and then the rest of the record we started just like a month ago, and we only had about, I think, 10 days in the studio.
Okay.
And so just about done. I mean, we're doing some organ tracks this week, and then we have four mixing days at London Bridge. So, but we're really excited about it. I mean, the recording process has been beyond anything I've experienced before, for sure. It's been like a total learning experience for me. I mean, especially with Rick, and that guy is just like...
Total pro.
Yeah, right? We showed up, I mean, the first day, even for those first four songs in November, it was like... I mean, you were there early, but the drums, I mean, the drums, like, it was like 30 channels or something. Like,
it was insane. Recording, I could hear, I felt like I could hear every angle of the room while I was playing.
It was wild. Yeah, he had his exact setup that he had used on every record he's ever done. And
does that kind of thing make you a little bit nervous? Like playing,
I think,
in a studio like that?
When we started playing together, we kind of just were deciding, you know, okay, this is the guy who's going to do the record, you know. And I knew who he was. I knew some of the records that he had done, and I kind of went on his Wikipedia page and was looking at it and stuff. And
I think more nervous.
I wasn't nervous when we showed up to the studio. I was more excited. But when he came to the practice space to kind of work with us on some songs, you know, I was like convinced. I was like,
so okay. He's producing it too.
Yeah. Okay. I was convinced. I mean, this guy has recorded, you know, some extremely talented drummers in the past.
Yeah.
I was like, I could be 2 seconds into a song and be like, get the fuck out of my face. You know, I was like, I was convinced that was going to happen. So I think once we got past that point, and he was "No, I'm really happy about this. This should be really good." I was like, "All right, let's do this." You had to get over that hurdle.
That's fantastic, though. I'm really excited for you guys. I really like the stuff that's that you got coming out here. Come on, Doll. I've Got a Notion. Cold Feet Killer.
Yeah.
What is a Cold Feet Killer, by the way?
I have to ask this guy.
Well, the song is about. the song is originally about. Just a relationship where there's like commitment issues, but it was funny. It just got wrote up by a woman's lifestyle magazine.
Oh my god!
Like last month,
god,
and
so
it was like totally off the wall. Their description was amazing. I wish I could like quote it, but I can't remember what
you should.
What was
you should
it?
Put that up on your website.
Oh man, it was great. I just can't. It was just like with this whole storyline behind it.
Oh
and,
wow!
Like, how they like all like they like totally broke down all the lyrics and had their own idea of what it all meant.
Did they contact you about that at all?
Oh yeah. It was. They asked us if they could do a write up on the song and the video. So it was mostly on the video.
Yeah.
And it was funny. They couldn't really get it right. But yeah, originally the song was just about like a relationship thing where there's like commitment issues and you know, that was about it. But But yeah, it was definitely taken to another level by the woman lifestyle, woman's lifestyle magazine. That was pretty interesting. Anyways, well, what's
So what's coming up for the future? What, you got some shows coming up? What's going on?
Yeah, we have a we're doing a show that the End 107.7 The End is putting on May 4th in Volunteer Park.
Right here in Seattle,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I believe we're playing at 3:30
Yeah,
awesome. We're on at 3:30 Young Evils are before us, which they're amazing. If you haven't seen them before, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, they are
come
great.
Come early and watch them. And there's a 5K run before that, that is for charity. So,
ooh, for a run
if you feel like going for a very long run. Then yeah, you should come early and do that.
Listening to some rock music, perfect.
If you have perfect the energy combination. To ground, you should definitely do it. And yeah, it should be fun. There's going to be margaritas and beer and taco trucks. Awesome. And yeah, it should be a good time.
All things so, awesome after a big, long run. And then are you guys doing a tour in support of the album? When does the album come out?
Well, we don't know. That's the thing. So okay. Right now we are...
You got to shop it around.
Exactly.
Right?
So okay. And so right now we're just in discussion with people about that and just figuring out who's going to put it out. Like... I can't even begin to comment on that. I don't even know.
Yeah.
You know, that really honestly depends on the label. So like first thing that I do is find someone to put it out, and then once we do, we have to talk to them about when is a good time to put it out.
Of
so,
course. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean it's done, it's gonna be done soon. So
awesome.
So we'll
awesome.
Have it completed. And then yeah, we don't know. So I mean we're definitely going on a little West Coast tour in June. For a couple of weeks, you know, San Fran, LA, San Diego,
and you can find all this stuff at the mygoodnessmusic.com.
Yes, I don't think we've actually announced the locations and exact dates yet, but we're definitely
coming soon.
Yeah, second week of June. Excellent. And then we are doing a show. They're starting up the Waterfront Pier series again in August.
Seattle once again.
Yeah, start playing August 24th on the pier.
Nice, man.
Which should be a really good time.
Excellent.
For that. So
should be good.
That'll be our next Seattle show after the one in Volunteer Park.
Wonderful. So, yeah. Wonderful. Well, like I said, it's the new stuff sounds awesome. I'm really excited for you guys. So best of luck in the future.
Thank you. And, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
All right.
Fingers crossed, too.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. And you can go and check out My Goodness at mygoodnessmusic.com. You can also check out their Twitter and their Facebook and all that good stuff. And remember to check us out at www.air-raid.net. You can also check out the Facebook page and the Twitter at Air Raid Net. What's your guys' Twitter handle? Do you know?
My Goodness Music.
It is. All right. And go to iTunes and rate and review the show. It helps us to continue to get great guests like My Goodness, Joel and Andy here in the dining room, which I don't know if they knew they were coming to a dude's house, but it happened and it's done. So I gave them bourbon and they accepted. So it's all done. All right, we're gonna go out today with the song "Cold Feet Killer" by My Goodness, and we'll be back next week with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good one. Killer. Should have took my word. Take time, try to learn. She said I won't, but she don't. She don't